The work of this church in the world is realized through the generous financial support of all who call this place home. Along with the gifts and time and talent, ours is a shared ministry. You have a role to play here. Church membership is open to all. For more information, go to uusf.org.
Our spirits resound with clashing, noisy silences, while something deep within hungers and thirsts for the still moment and the resting lull. We are alive at such an amazing time. Such an amazing time. The stakes, even just day to day, if you listen to the news, seem like we might be at the beginning of an apocalypse. Or we're at the beginning of a century of transformation and hope. Or we're at the living in a time that's confused and might be somewhere between perfection and terror. Just like many generations before us. In the ancient book of Ecclesiastes, which is a collection of Jewish wisdom literature, there is a poignant meditation in the fourth and fifth chapters, which I offer a little adapted. And it is written, "More decent is a poor and wise child than an old and foolish king, who will no more be admonished. For out of prison, an old and foolish king comes to reign, but the child that is born in the kingdom becomes poor. For a dream comes to reality through a multitude of action, and a fool's voice is known by a multitude of words." Are we known by a multitude of action or a multitude of words? In this century, are we to be known by how we act or what we say? Are we loyal to a poor wise child or to an old foolish king? Our tradition teaches that spirituality and community are related, that choices are sacred, that authentic connection blossoms where pluralism is honored. And in this glorious Gilded Age sanctuary, we have ancient reminders on the wall. The kingdom of God is within you. What does the Lord require of you but to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with the divine? Those words call us into dialogue with ancient traditions. And as the theologian Dr. Sharon Welch reminds us, worship of nature, love and interdependence, that does not ensure success, but it does offer the possibility of a life of belonging and resistance. As poignantly expressed in the Prayer of Sorrow in our gray hymn books, we have become estranged from the movements of the earth. We have turned our back on cycles of life. We have sought only our own security. We have distorted our knowledge. We have abused our power. The creatures are disappearing, and the humans are despairing. Perhaps in ways unintentional as a culture, we do find ourselves honoring foolish kings in industry, politics, and religion more than we do poor wise youth. But today, as we gather in our congregation, joining hundreds throughout the whole city, joining 19 Unitarian Universalist congregations between Napa and Hayward, discerning this common question, what is love asking of us? What is love asking us on Market Street? What is love asking of us when we're on the Muni bus? What is love asking of us in our roles, in our professions, in our families? What is love asking us to do at this time? What does it mean to espouse faith in love and in a wider circle of concern during this time, a time for many of our peers of extreme heat, flash floods, and fossil fuel pollution? What does it mean to espouse faith in love when the structures of oppression are objectively racialized, class-inflected, and gender-dominating? And this is the great paradox. Our Unitarian and Universalist religious movements, our traditions of freedom and organized love, they were born and grew during times of war. Whether we go and look at the Eastern Europeans, the early Unitarians trying to make a space for civil liberty, where we look at this congregation in the 19th century, where people were fighting for abolition and a vision of this country totally different from the 100 years prior. Or we think about the Universalists after World War II in Manila who were testifying for human rights and labor justice. The paradox of our faith is that we proclaim love and the necessity of care in times of upheaval and harm. And the unique challenge of climate justice, of responding to fossil fuel destruction, is real. But every generation has a distinct set of harms and foolish kings that we are called to either ignore, avoid, or resist, topple, and build something better. Ironically, the very bleak historical moments also bring forth opportunities to do tremendous good. Tremendous good. And our faith today asks us to proclaim love in a city that has struggled with earthquakes and may yet again. Violence, police brutality, extreme inequality, addiction and overdose deaths. What does it mean to proclaim love here? And I suggest part of the proclamation of love in this tradition, wherever you are in the world, is accompaniment in hard times, not avoiding. The great temptation in Unitarian Universalism is to go into an academic, emotionally removed space. Our ancestors fought for the freedom to interpret scriptures. But people are not books. People are people. We can't just put a person on a shelf and forget them. Sometimes we go through hard times, and the call of our faith, the call of freedom embodied and love actualized, is to accompany during hard moments. We say that our interdependence is unbreakable. We can't ignore it, but it's a real fact. It's a real fact. I don't know about you, but I'm happy and humbled to be part of a network of religious communities going back centuries, reminding us that we are all tied together, that the sacred surrounds us, and that we have obligations to one another. And I'm also invited and challenged by interfaith leaders like Valerie Carr, who says, when I spend time listening to people who are speaking from their deepest wisdom, I can feel understanding, inspiration, and energy nourish the root of my own wisdom. Unitarian Universalism does not have a monopoly on love, but we have an important role to play in the coalition of faith seeking to make love and kindness real. And we have to listen to what love is asking us as individuals and as a community to do, because you and I have the same world that we're in. We hear the same stories, see the same news, encounter the same heartbreak on the streets. This is a heartache time. The United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change wrote, over the last century, human influence has warmed the climate at a rate that is unprecedented in at least the last 2,000 years. The UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has said the evidence is irrefutable. Greenhouse gas emissions are choking our planet and placing billions of people in danger. Global heating is affecting every region on Earth, with many of the changes becoming irreversible. We must act decisively to avert a climate catastrophe. Christiana Figueres, one of the lead negotiators for the 2015 Paris Climate Accord, said in a 2021 lecture, "The question that follows immediately, and that I am often asked, is, are we doomed?" And she replied, "No, no, we are not doomed. The latest science tells us that to keep 1.5 Celsius not just alive, but front and center, we must have global emissions by 2030. A much shorter time frame than we expected in 2015, and we must actively protect and regenerate nature. So while long-term net zero targets are key to signaling a direction, our urgent need is emission reduction over the next 8 years together with the fierce protection of nature." From the Pope and the Dalai Lama, from the president of the Sisters of Mercy to the president of the Union for Reform Judaism, to our own Unitarian Universalist president, Sophia Betancourt, religious leaders cry out for communities and culture to respond, to live more sustainably without exploitation, and to move from our dependence on fossil fuels to cleaner, safer energy. If anything, the mantra is we can change. We can change. We can change. And Reverend Dr. Thurman, whose words we heard earlier, was famous for saying, "We can never return to innocence, but we can move forward with integrity." According to a 2022 study from Pew, 7 in 10 Americans said their local community experienced extreme weather. Imagine how many would say yes this year. And what is extreme weather? Droughts, floods, intense storms, water shortages, wildfire, rising sea level. Across regions and to an extent, even political affiliation, many individuals saw this reality contribute a great deal, or at least somewhat, to the weather patterns that they encounter. We cannot prevent the rains or cool the heat as individuals, but we can collectively cultivate a consciousness of accountability to pressure our institutions to do better. And I have been amazed at the dogged determination of young adults across this country to push and challenge our institutions to think about what we owe the future and the present. One of the scary things about being in religious institutions in the 21st century is that in so many respects, we, along with most major institutions in the US, have so little trust and so little respect. In fact, most Americans have far greater trust in small businesses than the Congress, newspaper, organized religion, big business, banks. Almost every major institution in our culture is viewed with suspicion. But Joanne Cowis has said, despair is not a religious solution. And oftentimes the distrust that people have of our institutions comes from an aching longing to see a commitment, an embodied change, or at the very least accompaniment in the hard times. And I often think about how can we as a religious community, whether here in San Francisco or in New Orleans or in Boston, show up to let people know we're not hiding our eyes to what's happening around us. About a century ago, Reverend William Lawrence Sullivan, who was a former Catholic priest who converted to Unitarianism in the Roaring Twenties, he wondered, are we drifting into a situation in which the Unitarian Church is 70,000 members who will each just give you their 70,000 conjectures? Reverend Sullivan of blessed memory was more concerned than I am about making sure Unitarians or Universalists use the same vocabulary to talk about our faith. But his concern about the danger of diffusion, the temptation to avoid a definite answer, echoes to me a concern about the need to respond and collaborate in the face of the climate crisis. I have heard stories from ministers who have had to turn their congregations into shelters because of wildfires here in California. I have heard stories from ministers in New Orleans who saw their buildings flooded and neighborhoods destroyed. I have spoken with people whose congregation in the Hudson Valley in New York was flooded twice in 10 years and had to abandon it, and they are now meeting in a rented room in a Presbyterian church. The decades ahead suggest more upheaval to come, not just for Unitarians, Universalists. Numerous houses of worship cannot sustain the insurance costs that are tied with these disruptions. And in the wider community of faith here in California, life memorials and funeral services have been held by faith leaders for grieving friends and families, honoring loved ones who have died from heat exposure and flash floods. Just this past week in San Jose, an unhoused man succumbed to the heat. And in this heartbreak time, I suggest we have the capacity to work together. Religious institutions in this city and surrounding communities have served for decades as hubs of care for food, for shelter, for inspiration, for mutual aid. Now is the time to recall those stories and engage and learn with one another. I think back to the amazing testament of this congregation, from the early work for abolition during California's founding, to the early support for the freedom struggle here during World War II. This congregation has been a leader in responding to moral crisis with creative responses. The world we are entering is one where we will all become familiar with crisis, but also may it be one where we become familiar with responding in love. Billions of dollars are spent by powerful entities to get us to give up, to hide in our apartments, to pay money to social media companies, and to hope everything will work out, because it's kind of scary. And that understandable temptation will bring us a 2030 I don't think any of us enjoy. And I know you're tired. I'm so tired. I feel like history has been on a loop for the last 20 years. But history is always on a loop. History is always on a loop. And we have the gift to decide how we will spend our time, talent, treasure, and this is important, the opportunity to be still week to week. Howard Thurman would talk about the necessity to make time to listen to the still voice inside and the voices of those closest to the heartache. He was never patronizing. He was always curious. And I am humbled by the fact, the reality, that children born today will live into the 22nd century. And they will know a world far different in terms of weather than you or I or our grandparents did. But based on the collective decisions we make over the next 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, we will give these children a world that might be pretty good, or at least decent. It's possible. It's possible. The late Reverend William Jones, who is a leader in our Unitarian and Unitarian Universalist tradition and a founder of Black religious humanism, would implore often, waiting for sacred angels or waiting for a default liberal progress was avoidance of our individual responsibility to act. And avoidance hurt the weak, the vulnerable, and the oppressed. If you say the angels are going to take care of it or time, you're missing something. You're missing something. As religious institutions in the past, we have adapted to the heartaches of decades by providing food, shelter, hospice, warmth, security, comfort in the face of structural change. And I know, I have faith in my bones that we can be better and that we can listen to what love is asking us to do. A friend suggested to me that religion does three things. It provides mutual aid, it offers us anchoring rituals, and it's dream casting. It helps remind us that what is doesn't have to be. There have been people before us who have told stories and faced harrowing moments and built something better. Sometimes they build something worse. But then a different generation inherits that and chooses what to do. All across this state could be climate resilient housing, green space, clean energy, and community gardens. Every house of worship could be a cooling center in the heat. We don't have all the answers, but we can be part of the solution. We can be part of a community of coalition. Reverend Dr. Thurman would often say, in the quietness of this place, surrounded by the all-pervading presence of the holy, my heart whispers, keep fresh before me the moments of my high resolve, that in good times or in tempest, I may not forget that to which my life is committed. Keep fresh before me the moments of my highest resolve. And in that spirit, may we be attentive to the poor wise youth. May we reject the entreaties of the old foolish kings. And may we find strength for these days and courage and hope for tomorrow, as Dr. Thurman says. May it be so.
I'll be reading a poem by Aida Limón called Dead Stars. Out here there's a bowing even the trees are doing. Winter's icy hand at the back of all of us. Black bark, slick yellow leaves, a kind of stillness that feels so mute, it's almost in another year. I am a hearth of spiders these days, a nest of trying. We point out the stars that make Orion as we take out the trash, the rolling containers, a song of suburban thunder. It's almost romantic as we adjust the waxy blue recycling bin until you say, man, we should really learn some new constellations. And it's true. We keep forgetting about Antlia and Centaurus and Draco and Lacerta and Hydra and Lyra and Lynx, but mostly we're forgetting we're dead stars too. My mouth is full of dust, and I wish to reclaim the rising, to lean in the spotlight of streetlight with you toward what's larger within us, toward how we were born. Look. We are not unspectacular things. We've come this far, survived this much. What would happen if we decided to survive more, to love harder? What if we stood up with our synapses in our flesh and said no, no to the rising tides? Stood for the many mute mouths of the sea, of the land. What would happen if we used our bodies to bargain for the safety of others? For Earth, if we declared a clean night, what if we stopped being terrified. If we launched our demands into the sky, made ourselves so big, people could point to us with the arrows they make in their minds, rolling their trash bins out. After all of this is over,